Hello, everyone, and welcome to Super Metal World. This is Michael.
And this is Ty.
Danielle is with us this week, which means, according to a nod, Metalhead is about to happen. Danielle, how are you?
I'm really good. I'm super excited to be here.
This week, we are taking things to a new level with Pantera's vulgar display of power.
Hey!
Got him.
What you did there.
Yeah. Looking forward to this one. This is a pretty pivotal album in the entire landscape of metal, particularly throughout the 90s. So I think this one is going to be very interesting.
Hopefully it doesn't get fucking hostile.
Oh my gosh.
I hate myself. So how this works is we're going to go track by track. Danielle's our resident non-metalhead. Michael's our resident metalhead. And I'm kind of the go-between or the moderator. And Danielle's going to say what she thinks about each track. And Michael's going to say what he thinks about each track. And I'll try to bridge the gap. Usually what ends up happening, actually, is they just end up agreeing with each other. And then I have to have an opinion, too.
It's kind of weird how that happens, honestly.
So the sky is falling. And anyway, we're going to go through this album start to finish. But before we, as far as track by track, but before we get into that, I'm going to give you like quick facts about the album, kind of about the culture of metal around that time. And we're going to talk about each band member, of course. So there'll be three, nothing too crazy. Like, this isn't a history lesson about the band. This is more looking at differences in perspectives, somebody who's like rooted in metal culture versus somebody who's not. So that's the idea there. I want to get into it as soon as possible. So remember that you can find all of our other stuff at www.supermetalworld.com. You can find all of our other podcasts there. We have blogs there. A lot of great stuff on the website. We are available anywhere that you stream a podcast, on iTunes, on Spotify. Just go there and rate and review, subscribe, follow, share it with a friend, do something. One of those things. It's really beneficial to us and it helps get our name out there. And we would be so grateful for that out of the kindness of your heart, of your dark black souls. We have also media. You can find us on all social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Give us a follow, give us a like, all that good stuff. We have an email as well, supermetalworld@gmail.com. If you're an underground metal band who wants to share your music with us with a chance to get featured on the show, you can send it to our email.
Whoo!
There's so many things I have to say, but now we can talk about Pantera. Horns high.
Horns high.
After spending much of the 80s as a regional Texas glam band, Pantera redefined themselves as a thrashy, proto-groove metal outfit with 1990s Cowboys from Hell. But it was on the aptly named follow-up that they truly hit their stride. The mindset we took on going into Vulgar Display of Power was take the money riff and fucking go, Phil Anselmo once explained, and beat it into the ground. And they did. Here the band shed any last vestiges of their flamboyant past. Gone for good was Anselmo's Rob Halford-like howl, still in evidence on Cowboys from Hell, and distilled their sound down to the essentials. Dimebag Darrell's serrated rhythms and squealing solos, drummer Vinnie Paul and bassist Rex Brown's lockstep pummel, Anselmo's gruff bellow, cementing the approach that they would more or less follow for the remainder of their career. Furthermore, the material itself was incontestable. From the antagonist thrust of opener Mouth for War to the galloping power thrash of Fucking Hostile, the creepy murder balladry of This Love to the hulking two-note stomp of Walk, later covered by everyone from Avenged Sevenfold to Disturbed. Vulgar boasts a shockingly high number of tracks that have become more or less standards of the genre. Respect. That was written by RB, those are the initials, that was taken from Rolling Stone. They did a list of the top 100 metal albums of all time, Vulgar Display of Power comes in at number 10 on that list. So
that's pretty good. That's pretty high.
Yes. I'm out of breath. Vulgar Display of Power, here's some album facts. It was released February 25th, 1992. I was just a wee babe brought into this world. Michael, you had not been born yet.
That's accurate. I was not born until that summer.
And Danielle, you were just born recently.
I was 9 days old.
Dang.
Yep, 9 days old. A new level! Anyway, the length is 52 minutes, 48 seconds. The label is Atco. The genre is groove metal and thrash metal. The producer is Terry Date. It peaked number 44 on the U.S. Billboard, although I would say that it gave the necessary momentum for their next album to actually peak number one on the Billboard charts. It has since gone 2 times platinum in the United States of America. And that's all for quick facts. The band, Phil Anselmo, he does the vocals. He was inspired by Rob Halford early on in his career before focusing on his own style, which really comes into form on Vulgar Display of Power. He's a massive fan of hardcore punk. I think that's evident on this album. And he had a massive fallout with the Abbott brothers. That'd be Vinny and Dimebag Darrell. Those two are brothers, in case you didn't know. Dimebag Darrell, Vinny Paul, the guitarist, the drummer, they are brothers. He had a fallout with them. And, you know, the Pantera kind of, I guess, early 2000s, very early 2000s, kind of fell apart and disintegrated. He was an abuser of alcohol and other hard drugs. He is currently clean. It should be noted that early in the successes of Pantera, he went into cardiac arrest from a heroin overdose. So he was going through a lot during the Pantera era.
I think he was dead for like a short amount of time.
I guess
heart just
with
completely
that.
Stopped.
Wow.
He has been involved in many musical ventures post Pantera. There's so many of them. I'm not going to list them all. One of them is called Down. But anyway, there's a lot of them. You can look that up at your leisure. Dimebag Darrell, or as he's actually still known on this album, Diamond Darrell. Woo!
Ooh!
From the back when they were kind of a glam metal band. If you didn't know that.
Which is insane.
Yeah, check out Pantera's early career. They had a different lead singer, and they were like glam metal. I'm talking like Van Halen, Motley Crue, Def Leppard. They kind of were like that. Hard to imagine listening to this album, but they were. So he was Diamond Darrell, and actually he maintained that for this album, but the next album he dropped it for Dimebag. Anyway, he was born Darrell Lance Abbott. He's one of the godfathers of groove metal, if not the godfather of groove metal. He formed another project with his brother called Damage Plan in 2003. And tragically, if you don't know, now I'm going to tell you, he was murdered on stage at the age of 38.
What the heck?
On December 8th, 2004, Damage Plan, this is the other side project he had with his brother Vinny. They were performing at the El Rosa Villa nightclub in Columbus, Ohio. As the band played the first song of its set list, Nathan Gale, a deranged fan, rushed onto the stage and shot Abbott multiple times with a Beretta M9. The band's head of security, Jeffrey Mayhem Thompson, then tackled Gale, but was fatally shot in the ensuing struggle. A fan, Nathan Bray, was also murdered as he attempted to aid Abbott and Thompson, as was Aaron Hulk, an employee of the venue who tried to disarm Gale. Three others were wounded before Columbus police officer James Nigmeyer, I'm going to be careful with that word, entered the club and shot Gale once in the head with a Remington Model 870, killing him. So that's crazy.
Wow.
That's a shotgun, by the way. It usually only takes one.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you don't need multiple shots with that or much accuracy. Abbott was pronounced dead at the scene, age 38. Thousands of fans attended his public memorial, and the guest list included artists such as Eddie Van Halen, Zakk Wylde, Corey Taylor, Jerry Cantrell, and Dino Cazares. Abbott was buried alongside his mother, Carolyn, at the Moore Memorial Garden Cemetery in Arlington, Texas. Gene Simmons donated a Kiss casket for the burial, and Eddie Van Halen donated his original black and yellow striped 1979 Charvel Bumblebee guitar, which was featured on the back cover of Van Halen 2, to be included in the casket. A few weeks prior to his death, Abbott had met Van Halen and asked him for a replica of the Bumblebee. Van Halen had said at the funeral, "Dime was an original, and only an original deserves the original." So he's Dang. Buried with it.
That's pretty cool.
Dime was self-taught and couldn't read music. His major influences were Ace Frehley of Kiss, hence the Kiss casket that he was buried in, Eddie Van Halen, hence the guitar, Billy Gibbons of ZZ Top, and contemporaries such as James Hetfield, Kerry King, and Zakk Wylde. He was remembered by his neighbors as approachable. One neighbor who often walked dogs with Abbott said he was a hick with an attitude, and I say that respectively. We talk conservative politics. He was a big, big supporter of George Bush. Meh, not a great look, but hey, he was a supporter of George Bush. Jonathan Davis of Korn said, if there was no dime, there was no corn. So
massively, massively influential.
Yeah, he's a legend. One of the greatest metal guitarists of all time. One of the greatest rock guitarists of all time. Rex Brown is on the bass. Hard to follow Dimebag up, but he was a classmate to the Abbott Brothers, and thus he was became part of the band because he could play bass. And he worked on Down, that project with Phil Anselmo, the vocalist that I talked about previously, as well as numerous musical ventures. Vinnie Paul, drums, that would be Dimebag Darrell's brother. He was a drummer for Hell Yeah for 12 years. He died at age 54 of cardiac issues. Very respectable drummer in the metal and rock community. Very respectable guy. So there's the band.
Wowza.
Yeah, in a nutshell. That being said, guys, I'm going to be done boring your ear off, but now you have a little context going into this album. The first track is Mouth for War. Danielle, what'd you think of Mouth for War?
Okay, so actually, I started listening to this album from the first song, which is what I thought was the first song, but I had clicked the wrong song to start. So I thought A New Level was song one for a while, and I was writing all these notes about A New Level and was like, this is a great song one, blah, 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 and then realized that everything was backwards, and this Mouth for War song was supposed to be song one. So with that in mind, I feel like, and I just have to say this now, even though we're not at A New Level yet, I feel like A New Level in my mind makes more sense as a song one. So Mouth for War kind of paled in comparison for me. So they were reversed in my mind for a while. So I just want to put that on the record. This song was okay. I would say it's probably one of my least favorite songs on the album. It's not one I returned to very much. There's some cool moments of vibrato at the end of lines, like the line, I've moved mountains with less. When I channel my hate to productive, I don't find it hard to impress. He has some cool vibrato moments at the end, which are interesting considering this album is a lot of screaming. So I really latched on to the musical moments and the singing moments in this album because it was something I missed throughout. So that was cool. That was a nice touch and it added some texture. I wasn't expecting the song to explode the way it did, which I don't know why I wasn't, but I was like, whoa, this song just like went double time. It's going so fast towards the end of it. So that was a nice surprise. I like to be surprised when listening to music, and that was a nice touch as well. The intro was super vibey. I think it's a great intro for the album. But like I said, I think there were some other options that for me would have been a better song one. I feel like for me, this song's a little bit forgettable, and there are other songs on the album that I think would have come out swinging harder, if that makes sense. But I think the line, no one can piss on this determination, is pretty dope. So that's a really strong line from the album. I'm not 100% sure what he means by hold your mouth for the war. I don't know if either of you guys have any idea what he means by that. Any
not really.
Theories? Okay, cool.
I just assumed that it meant, you know, hold your tongue to when we're actually gonna like fight. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Like I thought he was just saying like shut up unless we're fighting. But then he says use your mouth what it's for. Speak the truth about me. I don't know.
Maybe he wants a kiss.
It's a little confusing. Possibly.
I actually found myself a lot of times in this album being like, I don't really know what he's talking about. Sometimes it was pretty clear. And sometimes I was like, the lyrics sound cool. I don't exactly know what he's talking about, but you know, sounds pretty dope. Like there are other albums we've done where it's very obviously storytelling or it's very obviously a personal narrative, like coming from either a first-person perspective or an omniscient perspective of a character. And on this album, the lines are really blurred for me in that regard. So some of the meanings of songs or like what they're trying to say got a little bit lost for me. And this is one of those, I would say. But yeah, it was okay. It's not one I came back to very much, but yeah, it was all right.
So I for the quality of the song in the context of the entire album, I tend to agree with you, Danielle.
Yeah.
Like in general, for me, this song is like, it's okay. It's good. I don't think there's not a song on this entire album that I dislike, but this one is mostly like, you know, I'm okay with it. You know, I enjoyed it. It's probably middle of the pack, I would guess. But for me, the most important part of this song is maybe it doesn't instrumentally or musically set like a really a new level instrumentally would have been, I think, I agree with you, a better opener because of its intensity and stuff. But for me, the first thing that I immediately notice is like the very percussive nature of this song. I think this is the first album that we've looked at that has what I would consider a modern heavy metal sound in terms of its like tonality, especially with the drums. The drums in this entire album, and I think it's very evident in this song, like how snappy and how poppy they are. Like the kick drum, has so much high end on it. You know, it just sounds like there's all this clicking going through, and it's not so much a thump as it is in like older metal tracks, which I find pretty nice, pretty refreshing. I think it's basically what exists now in modern heavy metal is these very clicky bass drums. Additionally, this is something I'm going to talk about all throughout this entire podcast is just like the tonality of Dimebag's guitar. There's something really special about the way his guitar sounds, not just from like his technique and personal expression, but just like literally the knobs and the tones, you know, that he provides with his guitar is like heavily scooped. There's almost no mid-range. It's all low and it's all high. It's something that no one does except for Dime. And if they do try it, it sounds like trash. And like, I think only Pantera and only Dimebag can really provide that sort of tonality with the guitars.
That's cool.
I've been chewing on this chorus lyric and I think I got it. So he's saying, hold your mouth for the war, use it for what it's for. So I think he's saying, hold your tongue for now, wait until we're like face to face and then talk shit to me. I think that's what he's saying.
Okay, that makes sense.
I could see that. That seems to be the theme of several songs on this album.
Yeah, right. I was going to say the same thing. Yeah,
it's kind of like, you know, don't talk behind my back, say it to my face. Yep. You know, hold your mouth for when we're, you know, face to face. The use it for what it's for was throwing me off because he's saying like, hold your mouth for the war, use it for what it's for. And I think what he's saying is what it's for is talking shit to me in person. I think that's right. What he's trying to say.
It's,
you know,
it's for the
okay,
war.
Cool.
Yeah, it's for the war. That's what your mouth is for. Anyway, whatever. So that being said, I think this is probably one of the best Pantera songs of all time. I mean, this is going to be in the top 10. So I do have to state that. I also have to state that the riff in this song is outrageously good and professional and pro and hits you right in the face, kind of like the album cover. I don't agree with either of you, but I think that this is perfectly fine being the album opener. Personally, I think Mouth for War or A New Level could have been the opener. I really do enjoy this song on a lot of levels. It hits you in the face and then it changes pace with that. Dun, 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 dun. I mean, there's this kind of sums up what you're going to get. So I guess I have to respectfully disagree. That being said, what part of this song are we playing?
Like I said, I love the line, no one can piss on this determination. So just that last portion, it's hard to qualify things as verses or whatever, pre-chorus, chorus, but that last portion of the song with that line is definitely my favorite.
So this album received critical acclaim across the board at its release, and it's still held in very high regard today, of course. It's listed as one of the 1001 albums to listen to before you die. It's a landmark album that helped carry the metal torch through the 90s and inspired new metal and metalcore movements to come later. Basically, grunge and the death of glam metal set metal music for a tailspin, and it was probably the closest we've ever come to like having metal disintegrate. You know, when Metallica released their self-titled album in 1991, Pantera considered it a letdown to fans because they believed Metallica abandoned the thrash metal sound heard in previous albums. So Pantera felt they had an opportunity and a gap to fill. They wanted to make the heaviest record of all time. So they kind of capitalized on the fact that Metallica, you know, Slayer and Megadeth were all going for these more mainstream sounds. And they knew there was a demand for a more extreme album. And that is part of their inspiration here. Drummer Vinnie Paul said that Cowboys from Hell was really close to the definitive Pantera sound, but that's the album prior to this one. But I would say they definitely like locked in on what Pantera is 100% on Vulgar Display of Power, and also probably one of the most appropriately titled albums of all time. Because it is a vulgar. That's what this album is. It's so appropriate. Anyway, A New Level. Michael, what do you got to say about that?
So you were talking about earlier, Phil Anselmo talking about for the direction and the purpose of this album was to like find that kick-ass riff and just you know, beat the shit out of the listener with it, right? A New Level is exactly that. The song opens up with this like massive sludgy riff, and then like transitions itself. It transforms into this like palm muted section. Like that is just classic.
It's a headbanger.
Classic Pantera. You know, it speeds up as it goes. And there is like a lot of interesting things to take from this song in terms of like, you know, it starts slow. It really speeds up. There's slow sections kind of brought in throughout. And I gotta say, like, just the main riff of this song is absolutely pummeling. It's rare that you hear a riff that is both like this groovy and this intense at the same time. And that's something that I think is Pantera has mastered at this point, is just like what is the grooviest but like heaviest and most pummeling thing that we can possibly write. I think this track to me is like the first you really get a good look at what I mean. You get a pretty good look in a Mouth for War, but for me, the chorus, you get a really good look at what Anselmo is absolutely capable of in this as a vocalist, and so that's really good. Like the just him screaming a new level of confidence and power is like all about, like, that's all Pantera is about. Fantastic, very intense vocal delivery, and you have the cool like guitar lead and solo coming in with like a wah effect, so there's like a lot of skill on display from Dimebag there. Something that I think is really cool and really unique about Pantera that comes up quite frequently is how during solos, there's no backing rhythm guitar. It's literally the members just, you know, there's no like studio work, right? There's one guitarist in the band, there's one bassist in the band. And during solos, most of the time what you hear is a guitar playing a solo on top of just bass and drums, which is an absolutely unique aspect of Pantera. And I love this song. This is one of my favorite from the album.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this song is really strong. Like I said, I thought it was a song one for a long time, so I'm a little bit affectionate for it. I've laid the breadcrumbs of this across the episode so far, but screaming obviously isn't like my favorite thing to listen to. Obviously, that's why I'm the non-metalhead. But this song was really enjoyable to listen to. I feel like it really came out swinging in a unique way. I totally agree with you, Michael, that it's groovy and also brutal. Those are two words that I wrote down as well, that it's
brutal.
It has a really strong groove to it, but it's also like, you know, taking no prisoners kind of song. I like that it establishes itself as a banger without coming out at like a million beats per minute. I think it really works up to a fast pace, but it starts out pretty slow, and it's it just has an interesting effect of having this really hard song that isn't, you know, slapping you upside the head necessarily with the tempo. Mm-hmm. So I really enjoyed that. I really like the breakdown that happens earlier in the song. That was Ear Candy. And I like, they change their tempo quite a bit through each song. They'll slap something slower or faster in there, which, you know, sometimes it's hard to wrap your mind around, especially if you've like gotten into the rhythm of one part of the song, but it is very fun and exciting, to have stuff that surprises you and adds texture and flavor. So I really like that. One thing that I really gathered from this song that I have come to appreciate throughout the entirety of the album is how much he enunciates, which is something that really matters to me, which we've talked about ad nauseum on these episodes. Mm-hmm. But he goes really hard on his P's, like power, and his T's, and even his TH's. Like you'll hear him end like a like very strong, which just means a lot to me. So I didn't have that hard of a time on the slower tracks understanding a lot of what he was saying, even though he was screaming, just because his consonant sounds were so strong. So that just made me really happy. So God bless. The driving riff behind the lyrics is super tight. This song definitely has a drive to it, which is another reason why in my mind it made sense as a song one. I'm literally going to beat that to death. Okay, I'm done now. So this song was really, really fun. There are some other songs I liked more than this one, but this is probably mid-ranking of my favorite tracks, or where I would put it, you know, in the ranking of tracks on this album. This song was really fun and I really enjoyed it.
This is Anselmo's favorite track from the Vulgar Display of Power album. This song, similar to Mouth for War, is about him breaking free from his former low self-esteem and being determined to reach, you know, a new level of achievement. I think this song really transfers to today's like me culture, you know, and I could even see these type of lyrics being included like in a rap song.
Mm. Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, this is probably one of my top three on the entire album. Very enjoyable experience. The main riff is amazing, and Phil is an amazing screamer. He's an incredibly talented vocalist. A new level of confidence and power delivery is earth-shattering. We'll be right back. Our next song is Walk, and this riff is played in the time signature of 12/8, which is interesting. Daryl had played the riff during a sound check while Pantera was touring for Cowboys from Hell, and the rest of the band loved it. Following this tour, the band returned home and found that some friends thought that rock stardom had gone to their heads. The lyrics for the song were inspired from these people's attitudes towards the band, and Anselmo's message to them was, take your fucking attitude and take a fucking walk with that. Keep that shit away from me. That's my Anselmo impression.
I don't think it's, you're not quite deep enough.
I know.
Like, you need to smoke deep. More.
Yeah, I do. So that being said, Walk, Danielle.
Yeah, this song is groovy. We got some gay vocals on the Respect Walk part, which is fun. I love group vocals. And it has a powerful effect to have that chant-like feel, which I always really appreciate. Michael, you said something earlier that I think is so important to just state about this whole album. This is probably the most like percussive albums that I remember listening to thus far. Yeah. The percussion is so strong. It's very clear. You talked a lot about the tonality earlier, but this is a beat driven, percussion driven album, which is just really cool to hear. The drums in this song in particular are really fun. There's a lot of cool beats that happen throughout the entire album. But this song, one of the main takeaways for me was how much the percussion is just driving this song home. It has a really great rhythm and it's really fun to listen to. I love the melody line in this song. There's like a little melody here and there that you get. It's not necessarily singing, but just like has, you know, the same tonality in each part. And I really appreciated that. It's more like scream singing than it is singing, of course, but that was really fun. And I loved hearing that. I'm sure y'all were thrilled about the electric solo in the middle that I could have lived without. I think this might be my favorite intro on the album of any song. It really bops and it goes super hard, but it also sways and it's just really fun. It comes out with a really steadfast rhythm. I can just imagine this song being like something that fans would like scream their heads off at as soon as like the, you know, the opening riff and the, you know, it was like played live. I can imagine people freaking out about this song.
Oh yeah.
I think this would be another great contender for someone. but it just has such a cool drive to it and it's a brutal song and the lyrics are amazing. You know, he's saying what he thinks and this is another like taking no prisoners kind of song. So I really enjoyed it. It was super brutal. It was super fun. It had a great sway to it. And yeah, it's up there for me and my favorites on this album.
Danielle, had you heard the song before listening to this album?
No, I've never heard any of these before.
Okay. Well, Walk is, I'm going to say, Ty, would you agree with me when I say Walk is Pantera's most famous song?
Absolutely.
So it's Pantera's most famous song, right? And it's like one of the most well-known metal songs, like ever. Like, this is like, if you're going to put together a list of like 25 metal songs, there's a good chance that like Walk is on that, like on that list.
Oh, cool.
This song is untouchable. The main riff is just simple, but so very effective. And it's one of the great metal riffs of all time. Like, despite the lack of complexity or the lack of speed, it's just, it does its job. And you know, like you were saying, maybe in the context of like all of this percussion and the way the back end of the song like provides the driving force, it just enhances the riff even further.
Yeah.
But this song is, you know, one of heavy metal greats. It is played in, you know, sports stadiums across the entire nation. You probably will always hear it at like a football game or something like that, along with like For Whom the Bell Tolls by Metallica. Like, this is such an excellent song. And again, we get like the solo with the really interesting rhythm section guitar. So it's just bass and drums in the background, just a really cool tonality aspect that is rarely seen in other bands. So yeah, Walk, one of the best Pantera songs, and probably the best song on the album for me.
Bold. That's a bold statement.
Is it?
I mean, it's a little bold. but it's definitely probably it's obviously the most famous one, you know.
Yeah.
I would say, yeah, it's one of the greatest and heaviest riffs of all time for sure. Like you said, it also is one of Dime's most fantastic solos, as far as that solo that comes in during this song. It's also the first metal song to top the Billboard charts as a single. So this wow. reached number one on the Billboard charts. I gotta say, I really appreciate everything that this song has to offer as far as the riff, the drums, the bass, and then most importantly, Phil pulls it all together, creating just a very memorable and sing-songy delivery.
Walk on home,
can't you
boy.
See? Yeah, that part's awesome. Can you, like the way he comes in on the verse, like, can't you see I'm easily bothered by persistence? You know, like, it's very like sing-songy the way he's mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. delivering it.
Bounces.
Yeah. And then the what it takes, who I am, where I've been, belong. It all goes like, like, it goes with the percussion. It's like, you know, it's like they hypnotize you with this song. And then the a lesson learned in life, mm-hmm. known from the dawn of time. You know, and we saw Disturbed perform this live, and it was a lot of fucking fun.
So
and
much
yes,
fun.
the crowd did go crazy for it. It's just one of those songs. It's easy to memorize the lyrics to. The chorus is easy, and the riff is easy. It's just, and that's why it's memorable.
Mm-hmm.
Just drive that riff into the ground. It's beautiful.
Before we get into the next song, Danielle, I was interested if you could tell the difference between the 80s metal albums compared to this one.
Screaming, I think. This album is mostly screaming. And a lot of the other albums we've listened to have, you know, been either mostly singing or a blend of the two. This one is mostly screaming, so that for sure. It also feels harder. That's like such bad description, but it feels harder than other albums we've listened to, at least for me. And I just think the production quality is higher. It just sounds more crisp, if that makes sense.
Makes sense to me.
I think I would also add that I believe there's just a definite shift in how vocalists went about writing lyrics and what they chose to write about personally. Mm-hmm. I think in the 80s, it's more of a let me write something that kind of represents this other thing I'm feeling. Whereas Phil just goes out and says like what he's feeling.
Yeah,
like hard on his sleeve. And he's not trying to like fool you with like metaphors or something like that. You know, it's just like, you fucking suck, and I'm going to tell you, you fucking suck.
It's all first person too. Not that the older stuff isn't first person, but this is all like, hey, he talks about I and me very, very frequently in this album.
Yeah.
And gone are the fantastical elements of metal, really, I think, you know, we don't get a lot of like singing about serial killers or the occult. Yeah. It's more personal, more related to just the issues or the human condition, I guess. So anyhow, we're going to go into a little song called Fucking Hostile. And I want to make this known before you guys. Well, I don't know what you're going to say about it, but I fucking love this song. So I don't know. Remember who's starting.
Michael.
Michael.
So
Fucking Hostile.
Track 4, Fucking Hostile. This is like a really interesting change of pace. The first three have all been kind of mid-tempo songs. And for me, I think that's where like Pantera, that's like their bread and butter zone, are these like mid-tempo, mid-range songs. But this song just kicks off complete speed change. The vocal delivery is faster here. And I would like to reiterate what Danielle said is the quality of enunciation that Anselmo has here is, you know, like you're picking up, despite his very fast delivery, you're picking up everything he's saying. And I think that the change of pace honestly is nice. I think this is a good, like in general for me, like with the pacing of albums, it is usually the other way where I want a slower song to control pacing, but the speed up here is actually is excellent for me. And this is just a straight up thrash song. And I think this is the first time that we get a little taste of the singing from Anselmo in the chorus, where he sings to see, to bleed, etc. In the chorus.
Yeah.
And that's actually really nice too. So it's like this weird contradiction here. It's like the fastest song we've heard yet so far, but there's also singing in it. It's kind of interesting. Anyway, the final line in the chorus is "fucking hostile," delivered with like a megaphone effect, which is pretty cool. I think for me, this song is like about all of the rules put in place by society that holds people back, and it makes them hostiles. Think about like teenagers rebelling against their parents when their parents say, "No, you can't do this thing. I'm setting up these rules." Something I really thought was cool about the song and the lyrics was how Anselmo plays these different roles throughout the song. For example, he plays like, now I'll play the role of non-parent, a public servant, a man learning priesthood. And he describes all of these scenarios in which rules are put in place to basically that results in people becoming fucking hostile.
right.
Fucking.
And something I would say a minor critique I have so far is every single song that we have experienced so far has more or less been verse, pre-chorus, chorus, verse, pre-chorus, chorus, bridge, and like chorus, or verse, pre-chorus, chorus. So we're starting to see maybe a little bit of formulaic song structure. Not too much of a big deal. It's not really what Pantera does. They don't really focus too much on complex song structures. So Not a huge deal to me so far, but when I was kind of writing my notes, I was like, okay, this is like kind of starting to notice a pattern here. I wonder if we're going to experience anything different. But up to this point, it's been fairly formulaic and standard in that regards. But overall, I think this is a really great song, and I think the timing of this song on the album is well placed.
Yes, I agree with you. And I actually am a big fan of the structure because it makes it easier for me to tell you guys where my favorite parts of the song are, because I can call them things. So I can be like, oh, that last pre-chorus or whatever. Because on other albums, it's really hard. It's like the last time he speaks the stanza before he's like, it's so
that's
confusing.
That's fair.
So I appreciate it. I'm going to color you both shocked, probably especially Ty Bombersbach, and say, this is my favorite song on the album.
Wow.
Yeah. There's a lot of reasons for that. Number one, well, and not in any particular order. This is just the reasons that this is my favorite song on the album. I really appreciate a song that conveys the title. So obviously there's hostile in the title, and the song is very hostile, which I really appreciate. You know exactly what you're getting. You know exactly what you signed up for. When you see this song title, you probably have some idea of what you're going to hear, and that's exactly what you get. With the pacing, with the way that he's screaming, with the lyrical content, vocal delivery, all of it. I like, this is like a no holds barred song. It's very emotional, and I like songs that are very emotional, that have an emotional delivery. There's something about this song that you can just tell he's really connected with what he's singing. He's just coming from such a brutal place. It's just a brutal delivery, which I love. Also, this song makes me really nostalgic. I think, I don't know why, but listening to this song just gave me flashbacks of being like, I used to go to a lot of hardcore shows, like a lot of them, when I was in middle school. And this just made me think of like watching, like going to Battle of the Bands and watching these bands just like dominate the stage. And honestly, if we could rewind time and watch them together, they'd probably be really bad bands. But
it's the memories that count. It's the memories.
Yes. And I have all the wristbands still, which is hysterical because they're just like plastic and they don't even have the bands I saw on them. So I don't even know why I do. But I'm a very nostalgic person. And this song just activated that for me, which is really weird. It just did. It just spoke to me somehow. The scream at the end is crazy. Like, just like goes on. And then there's like the feedback. That was really cool. I loved that. This is my favorite chorus on the album. It has a great melody. It's sung well. It's super memorable. And so it would get stuck in my head. I'd like find myself humming it, which I always appreciate. When I first started this song, the first time I wasn't sure if I was going to like it. And then when the chorus started becoming more prevalent and you're paying more attention, it's like, for me, undeniably the best song on this album. I think it's the tone setter for the album too. And you listen to that song and you're like, okay, like Pantera's not here to play, you know? The lyrics are really cool too. You know, they have the part about he's kind of slamming the system for some of the song, you know, the part when he talks about putting somebody in jail for a joint and saying that he never prayed to a God who is no closer than a stranger. Those are definitely big statements. So this is, I think, a statement piece in that regard. There are, you know, two or three on this album that are that way. But this one makes a statement for sure. It puts a stake in the ground. He is super good about enunciating. There are some places in this song where it gets a little fast for me, which is a bummer only because I really like what he's saying. So sometimes I'm like, oh, that line was, I know that lyric is really dope. I wish I could hear it clearer. But of all the people we've listened to so far that are going at the pace that, you know, this song is going, he is definitely singing and screaming the clearest. So I can still pick up some stuff, but there's some stuff that I missed that, you know, I would have liked to hear more clearly. But yeah, low key, this song is just very nostalgic for me. The chorus is really strong. The scream at the end is terrifying and really cool. And the delivery is so emotional. And there's just something about this song that he hasn't done on the other songs that is really memorable. I feel like, considering I am one of these people, somebody who would listen to this album all the way through, who's never heard any Pantera before, this would be a standout on the album. I think this is one of the songs that they would take away as one of the most memorable ones. So, yeah, this is my number one, which I know is probably, you both are shook by that, but it's true.
you know, so, something that I don't think either of us talked about was just like the instrumental and guitar onslaught that is this song. It just like doesn't let up from like the guitars just absolutely don't let up. And as the bridge comes in, the bridge riff is just so intense and like spidery and all over the place. Like something that I wanted to bring up that I don't think we really talked about was like how just overall just pummeling and destroying this song is.
Yeah. For sure.
And I got to say that the solo there reminds me a lot of Kirk Hammett. It's like a lot of wah in it. And this song actually reminds me of the most of Metallica. You know, they're taking some of that. This is a hardcore punk / thrash song. Some would call that crossover. So I don't blame you for getting nostalgic over feeling that, because it's definitely, it's hardcore and it's punky, but it's also thrashy. But thrashy also borrows from punk music. So they all kind of have a relationship with one another. And Phil definitely delivers his lyrics in kind of a more hardcore way on this particular album. The particular lyric you're talking about, he says, "You seem to miss the point, arresting for a joint. You seem to wonder why hundreds of people die. You're writing tickets, man. My mom got jumped. They ran. Now I'll pay a public servant to serve and protect by laws and the states. So I'd bust the punks that rape, steal, and murder and leave you be. If you cross me, I'd shake your hand like a man, not a god." So he's basically just saying, like, it's kind of, you're missing the point. You're arresting me for this, but there's people doing all these worse things. Like, why is this illegal?
Right.
So I think that, yeah, he's definitely making a very fair point here. I would say that this is, you know, everybody likes Walk, but everybody likes Walk in the way that people like Enter Sandman or just Symphony of Destruction, the big songs of other bands. This one is unique in that it never reached the level of success and notoriety as Walk, but I think people really do like this song. I think a lot of people would rank it as their top one or two on this particular album, with A New Level being close behind. I just appreciate it. I love thrash. I love fast music. And I don't want to have this argument every time we do the podcast, but I don't care if he doesn't enunciate sometimes when, you know, because like this music and the speed of this music demands that he goes at the pace he goes at. And yeah. I think he does a hell of a job. And that riff that, and then the chorus, you get the, you know, fucking hostile. We stand alone. It's great. It's a great song. And I mean, guys, if you have perspectives, because I really want to hear the perspectives of metalheads or non-metalheads about enunciation in lyrics, please send us a message, because it's something that we talk about every single time. And I'd love to hear everyone else's thoughts. Fucking hostile. The album's cover is a photo of a man being punched in the face, and it was shot by photographer, Brad Geese, who also shot the photo for the Cowboys from Hell cover. The band told their label that they wanted something vulgar, like a dude getting punched, and that's what they got.
Nice.
I love it.
The first version of the cover that the label brought to the band showed a boxer with a punching glove, but the band did not like it, so the label produced a second version with the bare fist. According to the drummer Vinnie Paul, the man on the cover was paid $10 a punch and was hit in the face 31 times to get the right picture. However, Brad Geese stated that the man, who was named Sean Cross, was never actually hit. And this is just a folktale told by Vinnie Paul, pretty much. Because there's no way he actually...
Man, $10 a punch? Like, he has like, oh, just like $300 bucks for that? Like, give me a break.
Yeah, right. I agree. So it's clearly just an old wives' tale for to spread like mystique about the band, you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
Which I also think is a respectable and well, maybe not respectable, but it's an interesting tactic for Vinny. It kind of creates like this allure about the band, you know?
Oh yeah, so, for sure. Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of funny. Okay. We are going into This Love. Danielle.
Yeah. So this song is upwards in my favorites on the album. The singing, this is like some straight singing happening. And his voice is so beautiful. Like his singing voice, his tonation is beautiful. The timbre of his voice is beautiful. He has crazy beautiful vibrato. So you just wouldn't expect that coming from somebody who screams so brutally. So that was a really refreshing touch and a nice addition to this album. The beginning guitar effect or whatever reminded me a lot of Welcome Home Sanitarium. I actually listened to the intro side by side and I was like, these sound so alike. So I noticed that right away. There's some harmonies happening, which you guys know just makes my heart so happy that I'm getting some vocal harmonies. They're peppered throughout. They're not, you know, abundant or anything, but which adds a really nice touch. And I really like that. The singing is so tight. And I don't know if I'm going to offend people by saying this, but I'm very sorry if I am. But his voice, just the timbre and the vibrato spacing, like if you were to look at it on like a vocal track, reminds me a lot of the lead singer of Incubus. They just have a similar sound, the way they pronounce their vowels and the way their vibrato comes out. And my brother is obsessed with Incubus. So we listen to it like every day for 2 years on the drive to school. So I'm very familiar with the lead singer of Incubus. So I just noticed a similarity there too, which is weird, but the contrast of the softer sung verses and the rapid screaming choruses has a very interesting effect of just bouncing you back and forth. And, you know, sort of making you comfortable and then, you know, just slamming you into this metal song, which is exactly what it is. And that's why it's on this album. The chorus just slaps. It just does. The beat drives and the echoing screams are super brutal and super fun. The juxtaposition, like I said, is really, really fun. I will say that the line, I'd kill myself for you, I'd kill you for myself, is incredibly alarming. And I think we can all agree on that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, that's a little bit weird. But I mean, it's classic for a metal album. So, but yeah, I was just so, my heart was so happy to get some singing. And for me, this was the change of pace. You know, we kind of had the mid-tempo to the faster tempo and now to something that's more stripped down at the beginning with some singing involved, like some straight singing. And that just made me really happy. So this is my probably third favorite song on the album. It's just one that I really enjoyed and I kept going back to listen to over and over again.
I don't know how to feel about this song.
Okay.
I think like instrumentally, all of it's good. And even the sung verses are great. You know, I think the only thing I don't know how I feel about is the chorus. And I don't know, like, it's of course it's an important like contrast that needs to be set between the sung like downtone or not downtone, but like subdued verses and this very intense chorus. But I'm not really necessarily into the delivery of it, not from like a technical perspective, it's just like the timing and like the percussion or the rhythm there. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm still trying to digest it. Like this song doesn't resonate with me as much as it does. I know like a lot of other people, like a lot of people really, really like this song. Like we were talking about before, regarding like pacing and timing, I feel like this song is crucial because we're approaching like the halfway point of the album. You know, this is track 5. I think this is a really nice spot for this like one of the ballads, right? I think there's like two ballads on the album. This Love and Hollow. And this is a good timing for this track. Overall, like I think I do like it. It is a good song, but I don't think I like it as much as a lot of other people do.
I agree with you guys. I think it's a great change of pace, and there's great riffage, kind of like the bridge outro breakdown riff. I am going to take a little bit of what both you said. I guess I personally really do like this song. I don't know if it's like a top three Pantera song, you know, thinking of all their discography. I think I would put some other songs ahead of this one, but I really do like the song verses and the screamed chorus. I do like how he delivers that chorus personally, but I think this is something that you will see as we get to the early 90s, or excuse me, the early 2000s, late 90s, is the idea of singing the verses, screaming the choruses, or vice versa. Cool. I would say usually it's screaming the verses, singing the choruses. You got to sing the money part, you know. This is a formula that I think I would say you could attribute it partially to this song, what we'll see in more modern metal, which is interesting, although they do flip the formula where they sing the verse, scream the chorus, which is interesting.
There's something I wanted to bring up is how much the verse and the verse delivery reminds me of Alice in Chains. I don't know I don't know what the timings of like the Alice in Chains big albums versus like Vulgar Display of Power, but there's definitely like, I would say Alice in Chains is of like the three big grunge bands, probably the heaviest, or capable of being the heaviest. And like the verse delivery here just really reminds me of Alice in Chains songs. I don't know. Something I wanted to bring
up. Yeah, I could see that. And, you know, another thing that I forgot to say that distinguishes this album from the 80s is that it's downtuned. The guitars are not in your E standard or half a step down. They're like, he's like probably drop D. He might be in D standard. I'm not actually sure what he's on for this album. I think he's in D standard. So, you know, it's downtuned guitars, and Phil gets rid of his Rob Halford-esque shrieks on this that he had on Cowboys. To kind of fit that down tuning the guitar. What I could find as far as what Phil had said about the song, its main subject is a failed and draining relationship. Phil Anselmo says it's about clingy women at the time, young ladies. I was a very young man when I wrote that song as well. I was young and I thought, let's not make this more of a relationship than need be. It could have been autobiographical. However, it could be about and for anybody, they can make it fit their life as well. So kind of douchey for him to say, but that's what he said.
Yeah.
We pick up the pace with Rise, which is a thrashy number. It has another great riff in it, and it's got some interesting timing, I think, anyway. It has kind of that everybody love everybody vibe, which is a good message even for today. It's always a good message. So that brings us to Michael, what do you feel about Rise?
So after This Love, we're right back into the intensity. I think, I don't know if there's a single track on this album that starts as like in your face as this. And this is one of like the most like riffy, it's like super riff-tacious, one of the most riffy tracks that we've heard on this entire album so far. And like, yeah, like you were saying, this is like a pretty like empowering song. People should rise together and what they believe in and rise above those that oppose you. There was one lyric that I really liked is every creed and every kind to give us depth for strength. And yeah, like in general, like a really positive message, which I'm not like, I was like a little surprised, you know, taking a look at these lyrics, like I wasn't expecting that to come out of Pantera, but I thought it was really good. Like this entire album seems to be, you know, about overcoming those that oppose you and finding strength mm-hmm. within yourself, which is, I think, is a really, really like powerful message.
Yeah.
And something that I absolutely love, my favorite part of this entire song is the, I guess it's not like one moment, but it's just like the timing of the main verse riff in conjunction with the vocals. They're like, as the guitars start and stop, it's kind of like this start-stop delivery, like the vocals slip in between those cracks. And I just thought it was like a really, really cool and tight delivery, and definitely my favorite part of this entire our track, for sure.
Yeah. This song was really fun. And I think you guys both hit the nail on the head about it. It's a song of empowerment. It's a song that I imagine a lot of people would flock to as a life anthem or something that they really relate to and resonate with. It has a united we stand, divided we fall kind of mentality threaded throughout, and which is really good to hear. And I know, you know, like Ty, you were saying, even in today's age, that's something that is really a really good perspective. I also just like the idea of this group of people banding together, a group of people who may not feel accepted by society or who may feel outcast, finding strength and finding camaraderie in each other. So that's really great. The intro is super strong. Comes out swinging. And, but one thing that was really cool to me was, there's definitely screaming on this song that's standard for the album, but for this song, it feels more like talk screaming than, like some of the brutal screaming we've gotten from other songs, at least for me. It almost felt like more of a, motivational speaker or something. Like you're getting like a
just
more,
and
maybe it's just because of, yes. Yeah. Maybe it's more because like the lyrical content and I'm just like, you know, just like putting something on it that isn't there. But for me, the lyrical content just makes and the screaming just sound different. His delivery sounds different. So that made this song interesting and it stood out from the rest for that reason. But it's still a very metal song. You know, it goes hard and it goes fast and it's, you know, about a group of people sticking together. And as Jack Black would say, stick it to the moniosis. So
that's right.
It's just very, oh, I also, I almost forgot about this. There's a group of lyrics that I really like that just really spoke to me and meant a lot to me. They say, we've lived with past mistakes and we've lived with our own. Forgive. Be a man, not a child. There are no tears for peace. And it goes on and on. And I think forgive is a great lesson that any of us can take. So I think this song's just really special. I think the message is really special. And I imagine that this song probably means a lot to a lot of people.
Educate, read,
Okay, so No Good, Attack the Radical is a very interesting song. It's another statement piece, political statement piece for sure, on this album. And so far, at least recently, a lot of the metal albums we've been listening to have had one or two or more. And this is definitely one. We have, you know, lyrics like race, pride, prejudice, black man, white man, no stand. This song is very clear about what it's saying. I think some of the lyrics are prophetic, were prophetic of modern day America, particularly slow, behold my eyes, this land of fools will rise, no good for no one. I think we're in a time of fools rising and Lord help us. So it was prophetic and I'm sure true of the time and true now. So, and something that will unfortunately probably always be true. I really liked the talking bit at the beginning. I was obviously hit with reminders of Megadeth. We get some introductions or an introduction to a new character, or I would say a new character, but definitely a different tonation from the singer. That was really fun and added some texture to this song. I would say that the spoken verses to me actually sound more like rapping than
sure.
They do like, you know, singing, or obviously he's not screaming, but they sound a lot like rapping, which is cool. And so that's another reason that this song sort of stands out. It's experimenting with some things, which is really fun. There's some really sick parts of this song. I love the harmony on the chorus. It's just there for a line or two, but just that in and of itself makes the song stand out and makes it incredibly musical. So I really enjoyed that. This song was really fun for me. And I like the political commentary. I think it's very clear. And they're not shying away from what they're trying to say, you know? So I think that's pretty dope too.
So this song immediately hits you with this, like, this spoken section. And at first I was like, is that like an accent? He's almost like putting down some sort of accent, because like from the, in the first verse, he says, from evolution, we've been killing each other. I figure man should have it down to a science. He's like, why are you talking like that, Phil? Come on. But no, it's good. I like it. It's a really interesting, like, way of speaking. I haven't quite figured out why, the first sections of the verses were delivered that way. Still trying to like piece through that. I don't know what it means. Like if it was just like, hey, this sounds cool, so we'll do it this way, or if it means something more. But there was one set of lyrics that I found particularly interesting, kind of struck a chord with me. And it is, if one man had a home in one's world, he'd live alone without variety, full of anxiety. And being from like the upper Midwest, where it's, especially in the rural Midwest, is like very isolated, very exclusively white. And I often like see and hear people express their fears and anxieties of like everyone who's different from them. Like, despite the fact that like there is no one that's different from them, they just don't have any experiences with like any like non-white people. So it was right. Like an interesting thing that he must've also had experience with, because like they, you know, living in a world without variety, but despite that, you're still like full of anxiety. Found that pretty interesting. Again, we're basically, in another like formulaic sort of song structure, verse, pre-chorus, chorus, doing that twice with the bridge and then the chorus again in the outro. But it's what Pantera does well. They take these simple concepts and expand them out to these really good songs. Overall, I think this is an okay song. It definitely, like, I don't know that there's like necessarily a bad song on this entire album. But this isn't one of my favorites for sure.
I think the only thing you guys have eloquently talked about this track, and I don't have much to add other than what I was feeling the multiple times I listened through this album. Rise, No Good, Attack the Radical, and to an extent, Live in a Hole were kind of like I was dragging as a listener a little bit through those three songs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I picked up with song 9. But like Michael said, I don't think there's a bad song on this album. And I think some of that is just listener fatigue. As we've always talked about, it's hard to listen to an album start to finish without getting a little bit of fatigue. Just it's just mm-hmm. a normal human thing.
And this isn't a short album. You know, it's 52 minutes.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. So, yeah. And that's very true. So for me personally, I would say Rise and No Good, Attack the Radical. They're both songs that I think have a really good message, but if I'm being honest, Rise to me is just a not as good walk, and No Good, Attack the Radical is just somewhat forgettable, although they have great messages, which is a bummer. That's my hot take.
In the States, there's a problem with race because of ignorant password files. From evolution, we've been killing each other. I think a man should have it down to a science. No chance, not for a minute, not for a second. I won't be defensive, I'm straight out. In my opinion, you better listen to a man who knows what he's saying. I'm to your side, you're out of hand for the mere fact that you feel inferior. Be superior, and now you're inferior. Race, pride, prejudice. Black man, white man.
Live in a Hole opens with this slamming guitar riff, just dun, 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 just thuds.
Just like thuds, punches in the face.
Just, yeah, thuds you into the ground. It moves then into this really strange, not strange, I don't want to say it, call it strange, but this thing we haven't seen before in the use of like this talk box, which I think this is the only song we hear talk box usage on the guitars.
This is the song to me, to interject just for a second, because you're talking about the talk box. This is the song to me that reminds me of Alice in Chains, which is funny because they have a song called Down in a Hole. But this song reminds me of Alice in Chains.
So what's a talk box?
It's a where.
Oh, cool.
It's that,
okay.
I guess, Michael, do you know how it works?
I know it basically takes sounds. It takes the sound from the guitar, feeds it through like an audio tube into someone's mouth, and then they use their mouth to form the sound of the guitar even more to like dynamically change the tone. You definitely know it when you hear it, because I think you can hear. To get back to the song, the whole main premise of this song seems to be the narrator's issues dealing with others and like fitting in, and the narrator like won't fall in line with anyone who has like differing views than them. Taken like from the line, I promised myself somewhere in my teenage life I'd never submit to the ones I will not be like, and despite that, his fear, he mentions that his fear can allow him to will a thing to be, right? Like his fear is what gives him power, but if he grips too hard on that fear, he will die alone without any success from it. And the main chorus lyrics is, my fear grips the will of stone, my grip fears, I will die alone. And the thudding riff that we hear in the beginning, just that dun dun dun, goes throughout the chorus and is just like this really intense percussive staccato delivery, and that's the chorus is probably my favorite part of the entire song. But the talk box, mm-hmm. I think he says like, my fear grips, I think that's the delivery of the talk box. You can hear like the guitar talking, which I thought was pretty cool. Definitely an interesting aspect in a lot of, you know, again, just talking about like the tonality and the quality of musicianship that Dimebag Darrell has on the guitar is something special.
Yeah. Ty, you said this is one of the songs that dragged for you?
No.
Okay. Okay.
I was saying Rise and what was the other one? No Good?
Yeah, Attack the Radical.
Those two drug for me. This one actually just clicked for me today on like my third listen through. I was like, oh, I actually kind of like this song. So that's me personally.
Yeah, I would stamp this, the Ty Bombersbach track on the album for me. There were just a lot of lyrics that reminded me of you.
What does that mean? I'm not a hermit crab.
Just like, promising yourself, like the part that Michael said, I promised myself somewhere in teenage life I'd never submit to those I will not be like. Just kind of carving your own path and, you know, like feeling like an underdog kind of thing. And then the friends are few and far between. I feel like it's just like you choose your friends wisely. This is all very complimentary things. It just made me think of you.
Danielle is my girlfriend, for those of you who remember. This is why she knows these intimate details about my life.
Yes. I'm going to etch this on your tombstone. That sounded very weird and macabre. Yikes. I take it all back.
Jesus. I'm getting murdered too.
Yeah. No, that's not what I meant.
It's love. Love.
Moving on love. From that. To keep on the topic of death, we all fear dying alone, and I think this song speaks to that fear extremely well. We all want to find like our tribe, for lack of a better word, and I think this song grapples with that idea of this person wanting to find where they belong, but also not wanting to get into people that don't deserve them or hang with people that they don't like or whatever. So I like that this song toys with that idea. The unintelligible speaking lyrics, ? I don't really know, that's threaded throughout the song, even underneath other screaming and singing that's happening, provides for a very interesting effect and something that I really enjoyed. It was like getting a bunch of sensation at once in your ears, which is super cool. The solo in the middle was a bit long for my taste, but then again, this song wasn't one of my favorites. It wasn't not one of my favorites. It was just like mid ranking for me, I'd say. The whisper scream at the end, which I listened to a few times, it could never really get my bearings. It sounds a lot like he's talking a loogie. Which just really grossed me out every time I listened to it. It's like, it sounds like he's like for sure hawking up a loogie, and that's kind of weird because it's like a whisper scream. I don't know. That part was interesting. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this song was fun for me to listen to, and yeah, I enjoyed it. And it makes sense to me that Ty likes it because obviously it reminded me of him.
Yeah. And I'll grapple with that later tonight as I try to sleep. We call we call the whispers. I'm not sure what she means by that.
I just mean, you know, like you chose your friends, like, you know, here lies Ty, of someone who chose his friends wisely and, you know, stuck it to the man kind of thing. I don't mean I'm literally gonna
best tombstone ever. I really want that.
Okay. Tombstone. I'm on it.
Okay. Well, thank you, my dear. Okay. We call the whisper scream, we call in the metal community, we call that a weem. I'm just kidding. Weem? We don't call it anything.
It's like, what? I've never heard that. A weem. It's a whisper scream.
I'm just joshing, y'all. We don't call it shit.
Oh my God.
So honestly, the only thing I want to say is just reiterate the fact that I think for me, the album drug at song 6 and 7 with Rise and No Good. And it started to pick up with Live in a Hole. And this, like I said, this song took me a couple listens to, like, I don't know, infect me. But then I was like, oh, I actually kind of really dig this song. It's not like a favorite or anything, but it'd probably be like low key. This is one that I like that nobody talks about kind of thing. Regular People, Conceit. The beginning to this song really reminds me of old school thrash songs where there's a lot of instrumental buildup leading into the vocal delivery. We're going to start with Danielle on this one.
Yeah. You guys are already going to be like on brand, classic Danielle, but the song not even starting until like a minute 35 was just excessive.
Boo.
Oh man, I am the resident non-metalhead.
Radical.
I longed for lyrics and they came eventually. But you know, also I think this song isn't one of my favorites because there was, you know, this long intro and then there was a pretty substantial solo instrumental middle section. So I just found myself in this song getting distracted really easily. Obviously we know where, you know, my attention and affection is in music, which is typically the words, which I have been better about since starting this process, but I'm still, you know, just an old dog and this is a new trick for me. So, I did find myself getting distracted listening to the song a lot and I'd recognize, you know, midway through the song or more that I was totally distracted almost the entire time and had to rewind and start over. So this song was hard for me to get through sometimes.
Were you listening to this on a VHS or a cassette tape?
Yeah.
You had to rewind.
Yes. Well, I had to rewind because I didn't want to start the song over and listen to the minute 30-second intro again.
Oh, come on.
Come on, dude. That's ear candy.
I'm just being savage now. We have some more spoken bits. That is another throwback to Megadeth, just some similarity there, which I appreciate. It's just nice to have some variance in the vocal delivery. Like Michael said, I'm not exactly sure why he does that. I think, you know, in Megadeth, I think Dave has more of an idea of why he's doing that. There are actual characters. Sometimes it's not quite as clear. But it's cool and it's interesting nonetheless to have that, you know, different effect on his voice. The lyric, "You ain't got the ball, son," is so great. There's so many times you practice in the mirror to be just like me, but you can't see. You ain't got the ball, son. I think that's my new life motto. I'm all about loving yourself. And I'm like, no one can be like you, girl. So I really liked that. And yeah, that was really fun for me, and it made me laugh. So obviously that line stuck out to me, but this song was just, as a rule, kind of hard for me to get through, which will probably make you guys really sad. I mean, you booed me, so I'm pretty sure it didn't make you sad.
Get off the stage!
But I will pass it off to Michael, because I think I've dug myself a hole here.
No, you're all right. I mean, it's fine, yeah, okay. I guess.
It's cool, I guess. I mean, it's fair.
It's fair.
That's fair.
So this song just opens with this stanky ass riff that later becomes the chorus riff. It's like, give me that all day. And like the verses for me, I wasn't like necessarily too into them, but the pre-chorus and the chorus are like the bread and butter of this song. Because the pre-chorus, the lyrics are you think you own, I take away, take it with me. But the This is just an instrumental onslaught. And the, like we were talking about earlier, Phil and Selmo talking about for this album, they wanted to find the riffs for a song and just pound them into the ground. And I want to say this is one of the songs with the most riffs, or at least the most like
singable, no, you're right.
or the most like different mm-hmm. riffs. They're the most dynamic. And
yeah, it's pretty riff-tacious.
Like the pre-chorus riff is like digga 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 dang. And we have that chorus riff that comes in with that like cool lead, and the like most regular people say, regular people would say it's hard, and any streetwise son of a bitch knows don't fuck with this.
Don't fuck with this.
This was like a sleeper song for me. I don't know, honestly, had I ever heard like I don't remember this song. I've definitely listened to Vulgar Display of Power before we did this, right? But like I don't recall this song before we started like listening and preparing for this episode. And this is like such a dope song. The mm-hmm. pre-chorus and the chorus save it for me. I think in general the song addresses being like tough as an act, right? Like
yeah.
you think you're so tough, bro, but you're not. You know, don't let your fake ass.
Dissing, right. It's like dissing like the macho men, like
right.
that male mm-hmm. machismo, you know.
There is something to say about like how much I can take of Anselmo telling me that he's super tough. Like at a certain point, like I get it. Even
you're tough, man.
Like even if he actually is, like definitely, like the dude could kick someone, like kick anyone's ass, right? Like for sure, no one's debating that. But I can only hear it like so many times, so that's like one critique I'd have.
I love mm-hmm. that.
Yeah, right. There is, like you said, there is like a lot of self empowerment on this, almost to a. You know, this means nothing to Danielle, but almost to a Five Finger Death Punch level of oh, yeah. self-empowerment.
Yep.
A lot of similarities that I didn't realize Pantera and Five Finger have. But anyway, yeah, this is a sleeper for me too. It's also a very just like sexy riff.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah. It's hot. It's stanky. It's, you could cuddle up to it on a cold night and be warm. And also like, you want to dance with it. So...
But like,
I'd love for Ty to just keep describing the riff in different ways.
But not you're sort of like leaving enough room for Jesus in between dancing, if you know what I mean.
No, I'm talking some you know, for the people's eyes only that are involved in the dancing.
Some private dancing.
It's like when you have a cold and you want some tomato soup. How many do you guys want me to keep?
I don't like your tone. I would like it to change.
It's like when you have a cold and you want some tomato soup.
Mickey Mouse is here.
Okay. Anyway, I just really appreciate the any streetwise son of a bitch knows don't fuck with this. I don't know, this song is like I like the lyrics. I think they're kind of like self-conscious and funny in a way of like, you think you're not a tough guy kind of thing. So I agree that this is a sleeper song, and it really like jump starts the last part of the album. It woke me up, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah.
Not that I didn't like Live in a Hole. I like that, but that was like kind of a psychedelic mid-paced kind of song. And this one's just like, bam, right in the face, you know? Don't fuck with this. And also reminds me of, you know, I was trying to think, I was like, what other song says don't fuck with this? And it's that Trivium song that break every bone in your face.
Oh, from
if you
Crusade.
Mess with my lies, I'll mess with your blood. But what is that to the Rats?
Yes.
Is that to the Rats?
I think I'm yeah. almost certain that's to the Rats.
Cause he says like, don't fuck with this. And I was, this was bothering me because I was like, where is that coming from? So anyway, I don't know if Trivium, I don't know if there's any correlation at all. I think Matt does listen to Pantera, but interesting connection that I had a hard time placing until finally. So regular people.
The ball, son. I fight for love, brother.
Track 10 on this album is titled By Demons Be Driven.
Hell yeah, brother.
The like my first notes on this are, oh shit, this intro is dope. Digga 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 done. That's what I wrote. So this song just opens up. Well, it almost starts off with like a Raining Blood sort of like atmospheric guitar tones that are just kind of like ethereal and just happening out in space, and then it just comes in. It's just like this massive riff just enters your ears and destroys your mind, and it's just pummeling opening riff, moves into this like outrageously groovy first riff, and again we're at this like mid-tempo Pantera, just like the perfect tempo for Pantera and Dimebag's like groovy instrumentation. And I honestly don't really know what the song is about. I really couldn't quite figure that out. But all I know is that I'm a huge fan of the chorus. Just Anselmo screaming, "By demons be driven." And it moves into this, again, like this spoken thing. I feel like the deeper this album goes, the more spoken vocals we hear. I'm not quite sure, but it's just beckon the call, beckon the call.
Beckon the call.
Mm,
and it's just like, you know, it's doing it for me when I'm listening to it. And the I think one of my favorite moments on this entire song is the very last chorus after the bridge and solo is the... It's like basically they, you know, beckon the call, beckon the call, beckon the call. And in between that is like, by demons be driven, just kind of like that slips in between those words. You know, in between beckon the call is him repeating the by demons be driven. And I thought like the outro and the final, like basically the intro opens with this awesome massive riff and the outro has this really cool dynamic vocal segment. And like... Again, this is another like big sleeper for me. I don't think I like it nearly as much as regular people, but still definitely like a song that probably doesn't get enough credit.
It's a punch in the face. That song punches you in the face at the end.
I just would, you know, we've listened to some songs so far about self-empowerment. I'm just going to take this moment to give myself huge props. Because, you know, any of you people who have listening to this series from the beginning will remember that once upon a blue moon, Michael didn't care what song said, really. And he cared a lot about instruments. And he said that a lot. I mean, I'm not claiming sole responsibility for this. And we have to look at these songs with a critical eye because that's just the nature of these episodes. But Michael, the fact that you mentioned, I don't know what the song's talking about, enough to care about what the song is talking about, means a lot to me as a lyrics person, and I'm very proud of you, and I take at least some credit for you caring about the song.
You definitely deserve some, that's for sure.
And I will take it gladly. This song is, I think, going back to some standard metal tropes that we've seen so far as like, I think Satanism or like returning to the call, like responding to the call of Satan or like some demonic thing. I'm not really sure exactly what this song is getting at, but that's the vibes I was getting, at least thematically. I'm not sure, like, you know, applicably this song to the lead singer, kind of what it means. But those are some themes I was gathering throughout listening. This is another song that has extremely emotional delivery. So clearly this song is means something to the lead singer. And it's another song that's memorable in its brutality and just the way it's delivered. There's the guitar, the solo was a little bit wailing for me. So sometimes I'm really sorry, guys, if I fast forwarded a little bit through that part sometimes to get to the rest of the song. But the beck and the call part is so cool. And Michael, that's my favorite part of the song, too, at the end. It's just like the repetition. It ends just so masterfully. I love that part. So, yeah, it was nice that there was some familiarity with those thematic elements. It was nice it came out as a metal song. The song is super metal and it's super fun. And yeah, I enjoyed it. It's not up there in my favorites, but there's certainly something about it that reminds you, at least me, a lot of other music that we've listened to so far as the lyrical content and themes, similar themes. So I enjoy that aspect of it for sure.
You know, I was just thinking about this when I talked earlier about kind of that intro sounding like Raining Blood and like the solo. I wonder if there was any Slayer inspiration for writing the song, because there's like, certainly the lyrics have like some Slayer influences, it would seem. And it also opens up with this Raining Blood-esque intro, and the solo itself is like this, it's like this weird, strange solo that is exclusively almost like pinch harmonics, and it's really, there's like no melody at all. It's just like these ugly squeals, and that's also very Slayer. So I don't know if there was any influence from Slayer when writing this song, but that would be interesting to find out.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
This was another one that, you know, like Michael said, was a sleeper that snuck up on me. I was like, oh, I really like this song. I just have to say that the start stop, the
mm-hmm.
that part in the beginning and at the end actually remind me a lot of Metallica's One, which Danielle's not listened to, but Michael is familiar with. Mm-hmm. Just this very primitive form of what would be known later as a breakdown riff, which Pantera has quite a few areas on this album where they like insert these breakdowns before like breakdowns were like a metal trope, I guess, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep.
So this is very like the primordial ooze of breakdowns and how they would be used ad nauseum, almost to the detriment of some metal bands in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So, And as far as the lyrics, I agree with you guys that I was just reading through them again, and I have no fucking idea what it's about. But it's one of those things where it's one of those things where it gets me thinking. It's like interesting words to put together, and I don't know if that's what he was going for. Just this like weird, like these things sound creepy together, and they sound like
wordplay exercise or something.
Yeah, they sound like maybe they'll get you thinking. Maybe it'll take you to a certain mindset. I do think it's one of those good examples where, especially in metal, the lyrics don't typically always have to make perfect sense to still have an effect. Even though we don't know exactly what he's trying to say in this song, I would say he's more purposefully doing that to like keep it open-ended and keep it mysterious. I think mm-hmm. that is more of a purposeful thing. Like he's not painting the picture like Slayer and Megadeth have done in the past, where they're like, and then the child goes to the altar and we sacrifice the child, and then the child's blood is used, you know, like it's not describing like a sacrifice or something.
There is definitely something very sinister about this song, though.
There is
particularly the line, boiling my corpse in the blood of his children. Like, hell yeah.
Right.
Hell yeah.
Right. Exactly. Like, I hold out my hand to bloodless child. I'm taken by the one I was saving from death. I mean, I don't know. It's like poetic in a way. It's mysterious. And even the name of the title, I think, is a bit poetic, right? I mean, by demons be driven.
Mm-hmm.
Call,
Okay, so I am very excited to talk about Hollow because this is my second favorite song on this album. And this is just a song I enjoyed so much for reasons I'm sure you guys will guess. The singing is just superb. Actually, this song and whatever the song was earlier that also has singing in it, can't remember right now. It was
This Love.
Yep.
The other ballad.
Yes. They were actually initially tied for second place. I really couldn't pick. But this one has a tad more singing. So this one won out for second place. It just baffles me that, which just, you know, and Ty and I have talked about this a lot. We've talked about it on the podcast before as well. But just the ability to, for a musician and a lead singer to scream well in a way that is in vocal fray or in a way that doesn't damage their voice so they can still sing with a pure tone like this one. The fact that this man can scream the way that he can scream and yet sing with such perfect pitch, such perfect intonation, with the most beautiful timbre and the most beautifully spaced out professional vibrato will never cease to amaze me. Like, that's just incredibly professional and astounds me. I think it's so interesting that they chose a song that's very singing driven to end the album. That actually was a really nice bookend for me. Obviously, the song takes off and it has, you know, heavier parts and faster parts and the screaming bits towards the end. But the fact that they chose to end the album on a song like this is really interesting. And I'm really happy with it because this song obviously is one of my favorites. I love the harmonizing guitars. That was so exciting. I'm a sucker for a good harmony. It subverted my expectations in its placement, and it's not at all what I was expecting after the slew of songs we've listened to preceding this one. And melodically, the line, "No one knows what's done is done. It's as if he were dead," I think is the most beautiful melody on this album for me. The minor chords are so rich. They're just such beautiful ear candy. It's sung so well. It's eerie, but it's also beautiful. It just is like, it's a wonderful song. I really enjoy this song. I just really loved it. I could talk about it forever and ever, but the singing is just superb. And the line, "It's so important to make best friends in life, but it's hard when my friend sits with blank expressions," is really haunting. And I was like, is this song about someone with Alzheimer's? It kind of has that vibe of like somebody who was there mentally, and then all of a sudden they're not there. And everybody's like, what happened to them? We miss you. So I'm not, maybe you guys have a better idea about what this song is talking about. I think that's obviously a very literal interpretation of it, but just about somebody losing themselves or like going, you know, mentally unstable or having a psychotic break, or I'm not really sure. But it's very interesting to read and to listen to. The melody line is super strong. And I'm really glad they ended the album this way. It just made me really happy.
Yeah, I think you're right. Thinking about like a friend who is somehow incapacitated. Like,
yeah.
The narrator is distraught. His like best friend is dead or dying. Like maybe like a, like all my Alzheimer's or maybe like a coma or something.
Yeah.
And I think this song is, I'm going to say this is the most impressive song to me on the album in terms of like musicianship. I think
This
song shows a lot of like what Pantera is capable of in terms of just general musicianship and their songwriting ability. Like, I don't think it's the best song on the album. I think it's very, very good. But I was just so impressed with the flow of the song and how it moves from, you know, these very subdued verses and choruses, but it hits hard at the end. When things get heavier, it's just like a really, you just get a little bit of everything in the song about what makes Pantera Pantera. And like, you've got like these dynamic acoustics in the beginning, these beautiful harmonized leads, a very excellent guitar solos kind of sprinkled throughout, like these groovy as hell riffs right at the end, and honestly, like a phenomenal vocal performance by Anselmo, something that I actually wasn't aware that he was capable of. I don't know that I had heard the song before, like doing research for this album. And like, you know, of like the two ballads on this album, between Hollow and This Love, like I think Hollow is a vastly superior song, and I wish more mm-hmm. people would know about it and would talk about it. To be honest, I don't think Pantera gets enough credit for Hollow.
Yeah, it's really dope. It's a really great song.
You know, there's this. I was listening to the intro of the song, and I'm like, why do I feel like I've heard this before? And the intro to this song is so similar to the intro to Buried Alive by Avenged Sevenfold. Ty, you know what I'm talking about? With like the acoustic section with like the dual leads and stuff. Like there's just a lot mm-hmm. of similarities. I think Avenged Sevenfold probably took a lot of inspiration from Hollow to write that song, I would assume. Mm-hmm, maybe not. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But
yeah, they're definitely similar. To answer both your guys' questions, Anselmo wrote these lyrics about a good friend of his who had been involved in a car accident. His friend was in a coma and was being kept alive on a life support machine. So the title refers to his friend's state, a mere hollow shell of what he once was.
Wow.
And Anselmo expresses his grief and anger at God and just the whole situation in general for being able to happen to somebody that he had just, mm-hmm. you know, as he states, had just been talking to. I really like this song too. It's probably in the upper echelon of songs that I like, probably like in the top four, I would say. You know, I haven't thought long and hard about rating all the songs. I just know that fucking Hostile is my favorite, and then after that I don't know. But it's definitely up there, and you guys hit it on the head. They show a lot of musicianship here, and Phil really shows how talented he is. He's a supremely gifted vocalist in all regards. I will say that this song reminds me of, you know, Phil being a big Rob Halford fan, which is Judas Priest. This song reminds me of Beyond the Realms of Death off of their Stained Glass album released 1978. It also reminds me of Fade to Black a little bit, released by Metallica.
Yeah, I can see that for sure.
Either 1984. Something like that. So in the way that it's like this subdued song that packs a bite later, as far as like when he says, you know, he as hollow as I alone, a shell of my friend, just flesh and bone. There's no soul. He sees no love. I shake my fists at skies above. While he's saying that, he's kind of screaming more so. And the music and the percussion is picking up behind him where he was very subdued before. So yeah, it's a great way to end the album. I don't know where else they would have placed it. And Michael, I agree with you. It is the better of the two ballads. I concur with that statement. So that being said, guys, let's listen to Hollow.
Remembered, it's so important.
All right, it's the moment we've all been waiting for. Danielle, your power rankings so far, you have Master of Puppets at 88%, Peace Sells But Who's Buying 84%, Rainbow's Rising at 80%, Black Sabbath's Paranoid 65%, Iron Maiden's The Number of the Beast 55%, Rain and Blood coming in dead last at 30%, that's from Slayer. Eventually, we're going to have so many albums, I'm not going to be able to read them like that. I'm just going to say that the top one is this and the bottom one is this.
Yeah.
What is your percent ranking? And for those at home wondering, zero means it is utter dog shit. And 100% means that it is just fucking great. It's the bee's knees and the cat's meow.
I would say I spent some time thinking about this. Particularly in terms of, because now it's harder to think of things as just a percentage because I want to make sure that I rank them above or below things, if that makes sense. Like, because I enjoyed a certain album more than another album.
Yeah, that's important.
So now I have to listen back to the episode because I don't, you know, remember. the episode previous, so I can hear the ranking. Anyway, I would put this album at a 45%, I'd say.
Okay.
That's cold. That's cold.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very metal album, you know, and I'm not necessarily a listener of metal. You guys have made me one. But, you know, there's definitely some moments of great moments on this album. But overall, there are lots of other albums that rank, obviously, this one now that I'd much rather listen to before this one, you know.
I'm very surprised that you rank this below The Number of the Beast.
Yeah, I actually listened back to some of The Number of the Beast because I was like, am I really going to rank it below that? But I think some of their melody lines and musicianship attract me more than the musicianship and the melody lines on this album. There's some
That's
really,
fair.
You know, they're I feel like Iron Maiden, that is Iron Maiden, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They are super melody driven, where I feel like Pantera is less so, and in the way of like I wouldn't necessarily hum the melody line because sometimes I didn't pick one out necessarily.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. I'm just like a melody girl, if I'm explaining that well.
All right. Well, and thus the remaining episodes of According to Non-Metalhead become much less hopeful. I'm just kidding. It's going to be hard to, well, it's going to be interesting to see what happens because, you know, from here on out, metal is going to incorporate more screaming, but it's also going to incorporate some new metal elements as we get into the 90s. And yes, we are going to pick probably a Korn album or definitely Korn, probably Slipknot too, you know,
I know we talked about this on a previous episode, talked about Limp Bizkit, just saying.
Yeah, Limp is always in the mix, and of course, even later, System of a Down is, but that's getting more into the 2000s. So it's going to be interesting how you deal with it, because...
Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering, like, are we going to get a bunch of 30s and 40% now for the rest of the tenure, or will any of them be able to rise into the 80s? Will any of them even get a 90?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, I think for me, it's so hard because the standard for me is Metallica, because that was my most favorite album that we've done so far. That is my like top tier first place, you know? So it's hard to really compare anything to that. So maybe that makes me more brutal on albums that we're listening to now, but that's the, you know, just my preference and kind of what I'm looking for in terms of a high ranking.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. I think also I have to, there might be an adjustment period, you know, where I'll get more used to this sound. Like I said, there were some songs on this album that made me nostalgic for going to hardcore shows and a lot of things from my childhood. So There might be some more familiarity that I get exposed to as we go on. I think it's still hopeful. I think this is just, you know, one band in particular that didn't do it for me, but I'm hopeful that we'll get out of the 30s and 40s. I think we will.
Michael, the metalheads have to know too what you would rank this album. I haven't been asking you that enough. I think it's important.
I think I would give this album a... I was thinking about this earlier, and it's probably like a 74.
Okay, mm-hmm. Sure.
I give this a 74.
Yeah. Right on, man. Well, guys, as you know, we do this about once a month. And as far as what we would be going on to next, like I said, it's possible that we could be getting into nu metal. So that would be Korn. Definitely be Korn would be the first choice out of anything.
Yeah, so oh, for sure.
If we're doing that, it's Korn. Otherwise, I don't know what we would do because metal in the 90s is kind of tough. Otherwise, you'd have to do a retread. We would have to do Metallica's The Black Album or Megadeth's Rust in Peace, which are both early 90s classics. But we're trying to get, you know, we're going to go back to some albums, but we're trying to get all the way through to like the modern era before we do any retreading.
Yeah. And, so and get as much variety in, of artists as yeah, possible, I think is yeah, important.
Yeah. So I would say that it's a very safe bet that we're going to be listening to a Korn album. I don't know which Korn album, probably Ithuse or maybe Follow the Leader or maybe the self-titled debut. Difficult to say. Michael and I did do an episode discussing in detail the self-titled album. So not saying that that takes it out of contention, but it may, you know, push Follow the Leader into the running or maybe Issues.
Is Korn that band that the singer became a super hardcore Christian, or is that Slipknot?
That would be neither, yeah. But for Korn, one of their guitarists did.
Oh, okay. Somehow I know that. I have no idea why, but.
So if you think things were weird on this album, wait till we listen to Korn.
I can't wait.
Oddly, I think you will like them better.
Yep. That's my hunch.
Yeah, that's just a hunch I have. But it remains to be seen. All right, guys, thank you for listening. www.supermetalworld.com is where you can find all our past episodes and all our blogs and all that good stuff. We're available anywhere you stream a podcast. Rate, review, 5 stars only, subscribe, follow, tell a friend. We're on social media. Super Metal World is how you would find us. Send us an email, supermetalworld@gmail.com. Thank you for all the support. And those who do listen, very much appreciated. Reach out to us, what have you. And other than that, take it easy, guys. Horns high.
Horns high.